Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Tuesday, August 3rd. And
hey,
Jen is here. Good morning, Jen.
Good morning, Sam. What's
going
on?
I'm okay.
You're okay?
Yeah, just okay.
I just want to point out, because we talk about our technical difficulties on here so much, that we fixed a technical difficulty so simply today.
Yeah. It was unbelievable.
It was unbelievable, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good surprise.
Yeah.
I want more surprises like that.
Yeah, please.
You know. So you brought us a guest today. We'll get to him in just a moment.
Yes, I did.
And it's going to be fun. He's very nervous, but, you know, what the hell, you know?
I can see the blood loss in his face right now.
We are scary people here. So, you know, we eat our guests sometimes, you know?
We do.
So, have you been watching the Olympics at all?
Honestly, I keep meaning to, but I've been watching a lot of the bloopers and a lot of the success moments online, which has been fun.
The bloopers, where do you find those?
People just like make videos of them.
Oh, really?
I can send you some of them. They're great. They're fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen some people like actually capsize in their boat and shit like that, you know.
Yeah.
But there were some things, you know.
Did you see that bodybuilder like drop the entire barbell on his head?
No.
Yeah, that apparently happened, and I think it knocked him out, maybe. I just saw like a second of it, so I could be talking out of my ass, but I just saw the bar drop down and hit his head, and he ended up winning, I think.
Really?
Because he went again in it, and he did great.
Yeah, you see, that's another thing that I saw, a bunch of women running. Okay.
Mm, yeah. A bunch of women running.
Yeah, to simplify it. And one of them tripped, fell. Then she got up, kept going, and won the goddamn race.
I love that.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. You know what I love seeing, though, is when people are in bike races and, like, one person makes a mistake, and then suddenly, like, everyone slows down but still manages to completely compile on top of each other.
Right.
Yeah, that's, like, one of my favorite moments because it's so silly and awkward looking.
I know.
I love
it. And they all bunched up in one group, you know?
Yeah.
With the running, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
You know? And you're saying, you know they're going to trip. I mean, they're so close to each other.
Yeah.
You know,
you can just see it happening before it happens.
Yeah. But they all try to be in the most inner ring so they have, you know, less to run. So,
yeah.
That's the thing.
That makes sense.
I know. I've been watching, highlights, you know, because you have to have NBC, and I don't have NBC. To watch, so there's an app, but it only gives you like highlights and stuff, right?
Yeah.
But it's still good, you know. I mean, it just gives you the important things. You know?
I love how that was like a free network. Like you could get that on completely. Like you didn't even need cable. You just used to plug your television in, and you would automatically have like certain channels.
Oh, you can. You can with local channels. You get those rabbit ears. You know those. Yeah.
Who has that?
I know.
Who's
well, some
got
people
it?
Have. Well, some people have cable, you know. They have like, I mean, I had Hulu that was like with live, and I had all the networks on there and local channels.
Yeah.
But it was like $70 a month. I don't
That's
watch it.
That's what I'm
it.
Saying. Like,
yeah. So
no.
I give it up, you know. But no, I enjoy the Olympics. I like it. A lot of new sports and stuff there, you know, so I like to watch that. And, yeah, and to see the people with medals and stuff, it's pretty cool, you know.
Yeah.
But one thing I have to tell you is that there's been some controversy about what the women are wearing in some of the sports, right? Because it's kind of revealing.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe it, you know. I mean, some of the divers, like, you could see their butt cheeks and stuff, you know, when they get out of the water and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, or like the beach volleyball and
some of those women. I think there was a group, I don't remember which country, but there was a group that actually wore something different.
Right, Norway, I think.
Yeah. To kind of like prove
and they
a
got
point.
In trouble.
Yeah, but they wanted to wear more because they wanted them to wear less.
Right. Right, exactly.
Yeah, I think you should just wear what's comfortable.
But
like,
but it's got to be uniform among all sports. You know, it's got to be like.
But like women's volleyball, like the outfits are like.
Well, no, I'm not saying that it should be like that. I'm just saying that they all should be the same.
They should, yeah. And but they give probably them should not make them shorts.
Yeah, it just with in today's where everybody's all uptight and everything. I think that's like it stands out. You know, I mean, you notice it.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought. I don't think that's appropriate, but what do I know?
Yeah, like I think they should be given like a few different choices that the team kind of votes on as a whole.
Right.
Like a few, like, yeah, so.
Yeah. But then the other team will wear something else, then it doesn't look right, you know? So I just think the next Olympics, they're going to change that, you know?
I hope.
You're not going to have that. I mean, they had that synchronized swimming and, you know, and they stick their bodies outside the water, you know? Mm-hmm. And they have these skimpy bathing suits. And you go, what the hell are they thinking, you know?
Yeah.
So, but it's fun to watch it, you know? Did you ever watch
synchronized swimming? It is fun to watch it.
Yeah, I know.
It's like magical, kind of, synchronized swimming.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it is. It is.
It's quite difficult.
Yeah, and they go for 3 minutes. I mean, that's a long time.
Do they have a camera under the water to show you what's happening?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really cool.
But there's not a lot that's happening under the water, you know? I mean, they're just like moving their hands trying to stay afloat, you know? But, yeah, so there were a few sports I enjoyed, and they have archery, you know, which is nice, interesting.
So many sports that, like the last time I watched the Olympics, there weren't so many of these. Like, I don't remember ever seeing surfing or skateboarding.
They have shooting, too. Yeah, the skateboarding and the surfing is new, you know?
Yeah.
And they have, they even have those BMX bikes, you know, and somebody
That's
got injured.
That's really challenging.
Yeah.
It's a challenging sport.
It really is, you know? And but, you know, what can I say? And Simone Biles, did you hear that she pulled out?
Yeah, she
Well,
did.
She got back in, and she won a bronze medal.
Hmm.
So that's pretty cool. And there was controversy about that. But, you know, I mean, she said it was her mental health and everything. So, I mean, I can understand, you know, she had so much pressure on her.
Yeah, so
that,
much.
Yeah, that I can't imagine what it feels like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the weight of your whole country.
Yeah.
You know.
And the whole world is watching, too, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Do what you
whatever.
Gotta do, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever. Mm-hmm. It's kind of weird without an audience, though. You know, you see all these empty seats and everything.
Mm.
And you go, gee, that's not like, it doesn't feel right, you know.
Yeah.
But then again, it's been a crazy couple of years anyway, so.
Yeah.
I think we sort of like expect that.
I wonder how the difference feels like, because having an audience cheering or booing or whatever, even just the sound of an audience,
right,
adds such a different like essence to the game,
a whole different energy, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, for sure. Oh well. All right, let's bring on our guest right now, and why don't you go ahead and introduce him to us?
All right, we have the lovely Justin Pressman of the Israel Philharmonic with us.
He hey, Jen.
Hi.
Hi, Justin.
Thank you for having me.
Of course.
Is that how you identify as Justin of the Israeli Philharmonic?
Apparently, that is my new name.
I think, more importantly, is your roommate.
He's my roommate.
How long have you guys been roommates?
What, Justin? 2.5?
No, like a year and a half.
Oh my gosh.
Really?
Yeah.
And how did you guys meet? Like on Craigslist or something?
So it's a crazy story.
It's an insane story how really? Parallel our lives are.
So we went on Birthright.
Yeah.
Must have been, what, 6 years ago?
Together?
7 years ago.
You met there?
We met there.
So wow. I mean, Birthright says, oh, you'll make friends for life. And oh, it's like, it's, you know, you'll find the
like,
love of your. And I was like,
bullshit.
Whatever, I'm just on this trip for a free vacation.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, Jen and I met, and we got along great on the trip.
Yeah, it was him and one of our friends. It was kind of like the three of us that hung out most of the time.
Oh, okay. Where were you living at the time?
I was living in New York.
In New York.
So everyone who went on the trip, I thought when my brother went 10 years earlier, there was only like 10 or 12 people on the trip. And I was like, this is going to be so low key.
Yeah.
And I show up at JFK because everyone who went on the trip all had to meet at JFK to then fly to Israel.
Right.
I'm looking around. I'm like, there's so many people here. And someone's like, yeah, there's 42 people on the trip. And I'm such a hermit. And like my stomach dropped. I was like, oh, my God.
You are not a hermit.
Not anymore. At the time, I was.
Yeah, maybe she was.
I'm more of a hermit. But
yeah, when I was living in New York, I was.
Where did you live at the time?
I lived in L.A.
Oh, okay. So the trip actually included people from both coasts.
Everywhere, all over the country.
And it was a musical trip.
It was
like a talent artist.
Yeah.
I thought they make those trips like with certain parts of the country, you know. I don't know why I thought that.
Maybe
some of
them do, or maybe they used to, but for ours, no. It was people from all over. Yeah.
That's pretty cool, actually.
It was cool.
Know? Yeah. So... Yeah. You actually also had Giardia on the trip.
Oh, my God. I did. Yeah, I got really sick. I really had some stomach issues.
Really?
Yeah, he got Giardia, which is, what is it? It's like an ancient.
It's a prehistoric.
Really?
Like parasite.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, I lost like 12 pounds on the trip. I came back. I was literally so skinny. Yeah.
Where did you pick it up in Israel?
I picked it up here in L.A.
Oh, in L.A.
Yeah, at a restaurant.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, so you knew where it happened?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was like a week or two before I went. I got really sick, and I went to Kaiser maybe a few days before the trip, and at the airport at LAX going to JFK, they called me and said, you have Giardia. And I'm like, well, what's that? And they're like, it's this, you know, prehistoric parasite that you can't digest food, you can't keep food down.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I'm going to Israel right now, what am I supposed to do? And they're like, you can get medicine when you arrive back home.
Wow.
Oh my God.
And how do you get rid of that parasite?
Heavy antibiotics.
Really?
Yeah.
And it kills it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it was pretty bad.
Yeah.
I would have been so creeped out knowing there was like a parasite in me.
I know, right?
For like 10 more days.
But I bonded with some other of the birthright people on the trip because like we all had stomach issues.
Oh,
people
yeah.
had like allergies. It was August. It was hot. Everyone was.
I was with my people, man. I love people with digestive issues. They're just like my favorite, you know, because I'm like, my stomach hurts and people are like, okay. But when you're with people who are also having like stomach or health issues, they're like, I know.
And they would only
so you bond over.
Yeah.
And they would only feed us kosher food, like on the airlines. No one wanted to eat that food.
The food was so bad on the airplane.
Yeah. Wow.
It was absolutely horrible.
Wow.
And so when they flew us, we flew Swiss Air and then El Al. So, like, I definitely stocked up on some of the chocolates that they gave us on Swiss Air because I was like, this is all that I'm going to have.
And were you vegan at the time?
Yeah. Yeah, I've been vegan for 14 years. But I definitely ate some Swiss chocolate on that trip because I had no other choice.
So, what? So, vegans don't eat chocolate?
Well, yeah, we do, but not sweet, sweet, delicious Swiss milk chocolate.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Why not?
Because there's milk in it.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. So you eat dark chocolate?
Usually, yeah. Or there's now vegan milk chocolate. It's made with like coconut milk and other random things.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's terrible. You just have to find the right one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any special eating habits or?
Oh, I mean,
Are you vegan too?
No, I have an allergy to almonds, but that doesn't really count. But I mean, Jen probably will tell you that I have a very unique diet.
Very unique diet.
Really?
Because he's an amateur baker, even though he's kind of like falling out of that now because he's burnt out. Yeah.
Burned out. Really?
But he makes, as you saw my birthday, he made those elegant pastries.
Yeah.
So his dessert palate is super elevated, but his savory palate is that of like a 7-year-old Midwest American.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I'm not ashamed to say I have Subway every day for lunch. Like, I love a good football.
Why be ashamed? I mean, if you like it,
I love it.
You know?
Even if it's fake tuna or not real bread, I don't care. I love it.
Insist that it's not fake, so who knows, you know?
Yeah, we'll
the
see.
Funny thing is, the only thing I ever eat at Subway is the tuna, you know?
Well, I'll find out in 30 years what it did to me.
Yeah. It's true. Sam and I always say that. We're like, we never know what the situation is now. We'll hear about it later, years later.
Do you remember a few years ago there was this guy that only lived on Subway for a year and he lost weight? So they hired him to be a spokesperson.
Yeah, Jared.
Was that Jared?
Yeah, I think so. Right?
Yeah, and then he had a bunch of like sexual allegations against him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because, of course. Yeah, but so we met on Birthright.
Uh-huh.
We didn't really keep in touch.
For
too
those
much.
Who don't know, Birthright is a trip that is provided to Israelis and Jewish. Maybe not students, because sometimes in your 20s you can go too, right?
I went at 27.
Wow.
Yeah, it's American Jews. I think the age might be up to like 29, even 30. I think
they keep raising the age.
I see.
They want us to move there.
I see. Yeah, yeah. So they give you trips. I think it's done by someone private.
Tagliat.
Well, Taglit is the name, is just the translation.
No, what do I know?
But the name in Hebrew. Okay.
Okay, yeah.
Taglit is discovery, actually, not birthright.
Oh, got
it. So, yeah. But
yeah, you go for 10 days for free.
But I think there's a billionaire that's financing this. I don't know that it's done by the government itself. The
government, I believe, subsidizes some of it. But yeah, it's mostly private funding.
Yeah. So, and it's pretty cool. You go in groups, right?
Yeah.
How large was your group?
42 people.
42 people.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun, though, wouldn't you say?
I mean, it was kind of fun.
Because you don't get bored. I mean, you meet different people. You know?
Don't get bored, not because of how many people you're with, but because your day couldn't be more packed.
Right.
Like, that was the one thing that made me a little sad was, like, not just did we start the days really, really early, like, sometimes 4 or 5 a.m. Uh-huh. and end at, like, 10, 11 p.m., but literally you're like every 15 minutes of your day is completely planned. Like when we went to the Jerusalem market, we had 45 minutes. I was like, that's not enough time to walk through the Jerusalem market. Like I need more time than this, you know?
Right.
So you're constantly watching the clock. I found that really hard at the times that you did have for yourself. I found that hard to enjoy myself because of the time restraint.
Yeah.
But they're trying to show you absolutely everything.
Right,
so,
yeah.
You know, it's a sampler platter.
What's
of
so
Israel.
Amazing is I went and I had no connection to Israel and no connection to Judaism at all. I mean, my parents were Jewish, but I was like not connected.
Sure.
And I went on this trip free vacation.
Uh-huh.
And now fast forward 7 years, it's like I have my roommate from the trip. And now my job at the Israel Philharmonic, I become such a staunch Zionist. I'm so connected to Israel. And 7 years ago, I had no connection at all. And it's like, even I have to give them some credit for my life has totally changed because of that trip.
Wow.
Yeah.
So did you learn to appreciate Israel more?
Absolutely. I mean, mostly through my job with the Israel Philharmonic.
Right. And how did that start? Tell us about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, my background's in classical music. I played trumpet for a long time, studied conducting, and eventually moved into fundraising. And so my job now is the executive director of the American Friends of the Israel Philharmonic, which is the North American fundraising arm of the Philharmonic. So we have an office in New York and an office in LA. And for the last 5 years, I've helped leverage funding to make the Israel Philharmonic's programming possible, both in Israel and around the world, with tours, their education programs. And so we host events and concerts frequently in the United States.
I see. Wow. So, I mean, did this start like when you were in Israel or?
It was a few years. It was a year or two after Israel the opportunity came.
Mm.
It kind of was like my worlds combined. It was like my background in the arts and my connection to Israel. So it's been a perfect, the last 5 years has been amazing that my work is also aligned with kind of my passion and my interests.
Right.
What I would really love for you to share, because this is something that I think is really interesting. And I think it's also really important for people to hear, because sometimes people get really stuck on something and they don't want to move forward because of fear of feeling like they're letting themselves down or whatever it is. But you started in playing trumpet, and then when I met you, you were studying to be a conductor. And since then, you had decided to leave both of those passions and move into fundraising, where you seem to be really thriving and happy. So I would just love if you could share some of your story and how that process was for you from an artistic standpoint.
Oh my God, that's such a great question. Yeah, and it's true. When I was in birthright, I wanted to be a conductor.
Really?
And I had lived in Russia. I was working at one of the world's top opera ballet houses, the Mariinsky Theater, and had been working with some of the world's top conductors.
Wow.
And that was my dream.
Yeah.
And when I moved to LA, I ultimately had to pay the bills. And I realized that being a conductor wasn't exactly the kind of lifestyle I wanted to live. It was, you're up on the podium by yourself.
Yeah.
You're traveling a lot. You're away from home. And as Jen knows, I love my routine. I love my 9-to-5. I love going to the office. And so being a conductor just was not going to be the kind of lifestyle I wanted to have and kind of the impact I wanted to have on the arts. And I realized probably 8 years ago, I was like, you know, being an administrator and being a fundraiser is much more impactful to me and how I want to make a difference in the arts to make classical music and opera and ballet relevant and engaging and help major flagship arts institutions face the challenges of the 21st century.
Yeah.
And so I'd completely transitioned from being an artist to being the person behind the stage making things happen. And honestly, it's been so rewarding. And there's so many opportunities in arts administration.
Mm.
Right.
And especially with the program you have coming up, you're able to empower other artists as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So on this Sunday, August 8th, These are Philharmonic is presenting this program called Young Soloists, and it features 10 young, prodigious musicians from the ISO Philharmonic's education programs, and it's completely free. And it's an amazing program. It features the diversity of Israel and of our programs.
Mm-hmm.
The kids make up. There's one that's like legally blind. Another's a child of Ethiopian immigrants. We have an Arab-Israeli musician. So it's really, it kind of portrays Israel in a much different way than what people think it is. It's really dynamic.
Lately.
Yeah, especially lately. So it's an amazing program. AFIPO.org is the website to check it out. I've been pleased to tune in.
Do you feel like you might ever try and go back into conducting later in life or follow any artistic endeavor in that way later in life?
Maybe as a hobby.
Okay.
But I mean, it's so funny. The baking's, as you mentioned earlier, is kind of a similar thing. I think the moment you make money for it and it becomes that's your way of making a living.
It's not a hobby anymore.
It ruins kind of the magic for me.
Yeah. There's been a lot of things I've tried over the years, whether it be like I worked as a vegan chef a little bit for small parties and things like that when I was in New York, and I did, makeup, artistry. I did that on film sets and I worked at a Sephora for a couple of years, and I've just worked in a lot. I've worn a lot of different hats and all of these things that like you can be good at, because I was really good at a lot of things, doesn't mean you would like have to love them and stick by them, and I think people sometimes either get pressure from their family or from themselves to keep doing something just because they're really good at it, even though it's not fulfilling. And I think that can create a lot of like frustration or like inner fluster. And I think you just have to follow what really calls to you.
And I'm so grateful. I kind of realized early, like I still have friends that are in their mid-30s that are still in school, have $100,000 in debt, and have a flute performance degree. And by the way, there's very few jobs for that.
Yeah.
And so in my case, it was just being practical, is being realistic, and also was just kind of aligning my own kind of preferences of like, I love my schedule. I want to, make projects happen. And look, a conductor, it's amazing.
Yeah.
You get to shape sound and sculpt sound and rehearse with orchestras, and that's amazing. But at the end of the day, it's like, how much impact do they really have to change, to lead a flagship arts institution?
And I don't know anything about it, but from what you've told me, the process of actually becoming a classical musician is so difficult. Like you said, there will be an audition in Chicago and there's people flying from all over the country or potentially world to go do that one audition, and you have hundreds and hundreds of people, if not thousands.
Totally.
But what I do think is really great is you said they do all classical music auditions behind a screen.
Yeah.
So it's non-discriminatory, and I think that's really, really cool.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, it's been around for a while now, and we've seen that it's totally changed the demographics of an orchestra. You know, the Asians make up such a huge percentage now, much more than they did before. There's still issues in the field. The industry is really grappling with how do you increase Black or Latin musicians. But in general, the screen stays up almost the entire time, usually, sometimes through the entire process, but usually comes down at the last round. So it's just, you're based on your sound, you're based on merit.
Mm. Right.
I think that's really cool, yeah.
Yeah, makes sense.
In a weird way, though, it's kind of like, I have a friend that was like, that also reflects kind of the issues that classical music has had. I've never had someone that perceived that as a negative. They were like, well, this process is so biased that you have to have a screen. And for me, I've never perceived it as a negative reflection. I've always thought, this is great. You're only going to be based on your music making and your sound, not on your gender or whatever, your demographic. So
right. Because that doesn't make a difference in when you play the music in an orchestra, It's not like where you're hiring an actor or something, where you need to know what they look like.
Right. Yeah, you have to fit a specific.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I see what you're saying, So obviously you love classical music. When did that start? When you were younger?
Yeah, I think when I was 6 or 7, my grandma took me to see the Nutcracker.
Wow.
And it literally changed my life.
Really?
There's no question that I will never forget. It was in Cleveland, which has a great orchestra.
Uh-huh.
But looking down into the pit and seeing the orchestra and, Tchaikovsky's glorious music, it really changed my life.
Wow.
And I think having parents and grandparents that took me to concerts made the big difference.
Right.
But I had heard music as a child and just knew the trumpet was for me.
Yeah.
Just, it called to me. And I spent literally 13 years of my life, every day I practiced for hours a day.
Wow.
And really dedicated such a huge chunk of my childhood to
that. But when you're that young and you get into classical music, that's unusual, right? You're probably like an old soul or something.
I am.
You know, and you already loved it before. So
I think so. Yeah, but I mean, look, I drive around L.A. blasting Tchaikovsky and Verdi, and I've never – that's the music that speaks to me. And by the way, at home, too, Jen will know that that's the music – I don't listen to
that's all we
music.
Listen to, yeah.
Really?
You know, it's things from 1850 or, you know, 19 – whatever, 12. I mean,
those and it fits our ambiance.
Yeah.
We have quite – quite an eclectic apartment.
But look, I wish more young people had exposure to it. I wish more people were interested in it. I think it's for everyone. It's an art form that speaks to everyone. I really believe that. And I think that it's something so out of the ordinary to see 100 musicians on stage recreating these amazing masterpieces. I just think there's nothing like it in the world.
That's I think people have become really removed from it because of how it's been incorporated into general population. Like, a lot of people think of it as elevator music or, you know, a hold music when you call somewhere or something like that. I don't think enough young people and general people of the general population are exposed to some of, like, really, really great pieces that stand out. And I remember we had a conversation one time, and I told Justin, I said, I think a lot of times people have a hard time deciphering between one classical music piece and another. At some point, it just kind of becomes like, oh, that kind of song to a lot of people, even though it's not called a song. I know that.
Which is so funny, because to me that was like such a demoralized. I remember thinking like, oh my god, that's awful. Like, for me, it was so inherent, it's so innate to. But I also think that the more people listen, the more people enjoy and experience it, the better you get at it.
And I think at school, that's probably where you learn to appreciate that music. You know, when you take music classes and stuff. I think they introduce you to this stuff, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just now they don't have that many music programs in schools now because of budgets and everything, you know. But I think it's important.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
The high school I went to had a huge arts. We were really, really big in the arts. We always did the most elaborate plays. We always won awards for it. You know, like I always like sang in choirs and I took private lessons and stuff. Justin knows I sing around the house.
Very well, I might add.
Oh, wow. Well, we need to hear you sing sometime. No.
Justin's going to be my stage mom.
Yeah, exactly.
My opera stage mom.
But you're right. I mean, classical music in school, not being in schools, having no music education available to most public school students is such an atrocity, really.
Right.
And I was really grateful to grow up in a public school that had music. And look, in Cleveland, we had an amazing we still have amazing orchestra.
Yeah.
And I grew up in a town that had a culture, an amazing institution from, you know, over 100 years ago, an amazing hall. And I think that makes a big difference. I think about if I grew up somewhere else, not in, you know, a somewhat major metropolitan area, I just would have never even known it existed.
Yeah.
Interesting. You
and
know?
The people that I know that put their kids in public school and the kids that I know that went to public school, I say kids like I'm not in my 30s. but, you know, they were all exposed to classical music, at least most of the time in schools like that. And I feel like in public school, they never, like I went to public school, we never heard anything like that. So, yeah, I think that could also be part of the demographic issue.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting, yeah.
So you grew up outside of Cleveland then?
Yeah.
Do you have any siblings?
I have a younger brother who lives in Georgia.
Mm.
We're not in touch really frequently. This is so funny. I mean, I have to send him up.
No, I mean, that happens in families, you know? I mean, it's like my younger brother, we went in touch for a while, and now we're in touch a lot, you know? So it depends. It's like you grow older, you know, you find different things about. So maybe you need to get a little older.
You know, we were very different as kids. But I think as we have gotten older, we've been in touch actually lately because he's getting married next October.
Uh-huh.
And so I am planning to attend the wedding. And, you know, our family will be together for the first time in probably, I don't know, maybe 6-7 years.
Wow.
You know, my parents and my brother and I have not. That's our, you know, family unit.
Right.
We've not been together probably in all that time. So, look, I'm in touch with my parents frequently, but not so much with my brother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know. Were you close when you grew up?
No.
No, huh?
No, we fought.
Really?
A lot. Well,
but brothers fight and still
Totally.
And they're still close. I don't understand that.
I think as we're getting older, it's there's not like animosity. There's not an issue. It's
but fighting at a later age, right?
I think
not
so,
when you're like 5 or
Plus, in your 20s, you spend a lot of time in your 20s really just branching out and finding yourself.
Right.
So it's easy to kind of separate from the people you know a bit, especially a family unit, which you know is always going to be there no matter what.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's, you're just in a branching out period.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Did you go to college?
Yeah, I went to the University of Miami in Florida.
Oh, really?
That was great.
I love the topic of college with Justin.
Yeah, I mean, what a great... I mean, look, coming from Ohio, where there's winter and snow, the idea of going to school in the place for people's spring break, in and of it's like, initially, I was like, that's amazing. And look, I had a great... I went to the Frost School of Music, which is a pretty, like... It's a decent school. It's a great conservatory. I had an amazing teacher. And look, Miami is a really culturally vibrant city.
Yeah.
I mean, there's an opera company. There's a ballet company, New World Symphony. I mean, there's a lot of culture and arts there. And look, it's just a vibrant city. I mean, there's nothing like it.
Yeah, that's true. Do you live there? I mean, you lived there then. I don't know. Then, I mean, but...
probably not.
Mm. No, huh?
I'm like now, like just to West Coast, LA. But I mean, I would consider it. I mean, if there is the right opportunity, perhaps. But I don't really see it being a long term place.
Yeah. I don't know. It sounds attractive to me to move to Miami. You know?
Florida's a little wild for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I lived in New York. So Florida's wild for me.
I mean, it's nice to visit. It's a great place to vacation.
Absolutely.
Right. I think I'd like to just visit, have fun, and then come back into my real,
routine.
Real life.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So did you move to LA after college or later on?
Yeah. So after college, I won a Fulbright grant from the State Department. And that's like a pretty prestigious award. I mean, like, there's not that many Fulbright scholars. And I went to St. Petersburg, Russia. And so the State Department, you know, covers your entire 9 months time there. And you're basically an ambassador on behalf of the United States.
Really?
And your job is to, I mean, you're supposed to, you are, you know, you submit a grant and you have a proposal of work you're going to do. And so mine was to specialize in the Russian operatic and ballet repertoire as a conductor. And I was based at one of the world's top opera houses. And and so it was an amazing opportunity. It was incredible.
Yeah.
And I came back from Russia and I worked for a summer at Castleton Festival, which is in Virginia. And this famous maestro, Lauren Metzel, was the music director there. And I worked at his opera house for the summer and then needed to get a job and move to L.A.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool, though. I mean, you've been in several places in your life. Did you learn any Russian at all? How long were you there?
I was there for 9 months.
9 months.
And definitely my Russian was okay at the time.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you learn some before you went?
Actually, it's so interesting because in high school we had Russian.
Oh,
Russian
really?
Language. Yeah. It was like Spanish, French, Russian. And I didn't want to do Spanish and French because I want to be normal. I want to do Russian. But had I known in high school, had someone said, oh, you're going to live in Russia, you need to take this seriously, you need to know this language, I would have probably remembered. I mean, I was familiar with the alphabet, but I didn't take it seriously at all in high school. And then fast forward 4 years, I'm applying for the Fulbright grant and need to speak Russian.
Right.
And need to know. I mean, very few people speak English. It's really not in the conservatory. Right. Fortunately, my teacher spoke English, but most people don't do it, you know, and they're just strictly Russian. So,
In many places in the world, it's like that, you know. I mean, we take it for granted that we can speak English and it's an international language, but in many places, people don't speak it, you know.
It's true.
Especially if they're not educated and stuff, you know. You go to places that are like third world countries or
like small village areas, small communities.
Or some are just anti-English, like the French, for example.
The French, yeah.
Right? They don't speak English.
Totally. When I went to Paris, most of... it depends where you were, but I remember going out. There were a few times that I was like, I'm going to go to the store by myself and go get something, okay?
Right.
And I went out and I had to communicate with people who literally did not speak English at all. But I've also heard that sometimes the French will pretend that they don't speak English just because they want to give you a hard time, which I think is really funny.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I think that's really funny. But, you know, you make it work, you know. And I've worked in a lot of restaurants, so I've worked with a lot of non-English speakers as well. So I'm used to, and I've worked in international restaurants, so both dealing with people who work there and customers. I've dealt with a lot of people that don't speak English, so I've had to learn how to communicate otherwise, which was helpful.
Yeah. communicate with your hands, pretty much.
Your
right?
hands, like pictures, okay. like I'm drawing like a fish on a napkin. They're like, oh, okay, gotcha.
Well, I'm planning to go to Italy, God willing, at the end of this month. And I've been practicing. I'm renting a car, and I've never driven. Like in Russia, I was in cars, but I never drove. And I'm actually, if there's something I'm nervous about, it's not COVID. It's driving a car.
Oh,
in Italy.
Driving in Italy is gonna be tough.
So, yeah, and they drive differently.
So why would you rent a car in a place like that? I mean, just take Uber or something.
Well, I'm actually visiting the small town Busseto, which is where the operatic composer Giuseppe Verdi lived. And so I'm visiting small villages, kind of as a spiritual journey to visit like the operatic gods of my world. Yeah. And most of those places are not accessible via train.
True.
So I'm
that's
seeing Puccini's home in Torre del Lago, and the sculptor Antonio Canova has a museum in Passagno. And so I'm actually doing kind of like my perfect trip of visiting the gods of the arts that I love.
Yeah, very cool. Of course, you have to hope that they'll still let you in.
I hope so.
You know, I mean, it's getting bad.
Well, I have a question. This one's for our listeners. If you had a couple pieces of music that you would want a first timer listening to classical music to hear, what might those be?
That is such a good question. I think it kind of depends on who also I'm speaking to. I love curating like kind of some moods too. It's like what do you want this music to accomplish? Is it for like, you know, setting an ambiance for a date?
Are you studying?
Driving? Are you in traffic? Like,
wow.
I'm almost stumped.
Wow, I love stumping.
Look, I don't
Justin.
Think there's any, there's, I think the standard. So for me, it's like, check out a Verdi, you know, whether that's Traviata or a Bohème by Puccini, maybe a Tchaikovsky, Eugene Onegin. Those are like probably the three operas maybe I would recommend, like your 101. But depending on like kind of what your tastes are, I mean,
check out those pieces and leave us a comment
on
Facebook.
The one thing that if you guys really want a trip, like the opera that changed, that turned me on to opera was Richard Strauss's Salome. It's an hour and a half. It's tight. It's like TV. And in the middle, you know, she has the dance of the seven veils and literally gets naked.
Really?
And I remember watching this as a teenager being like, oh my God, this opera's out of this world. And they're, you know, beheading John the Baptist and she's kissing the head. So, I mean, opera can be what you think it is. It can be these kind of like beautiful, but it also can be ravishing and erotic and completely out of the box. And so maybe your listeners should listen to Salome because that's what turned me.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I'd rather watch it than listen to it.
Kissing beheaded heads.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, what a crazy, turn of the century work. I mean, you know, I think if people saw Salome, they'd be like, okay, I like opera. I'd be into this. And it's just like TV. I mean, it's literally so fast.
Really?
And it's like to the point. It's focused. It's tight.
Right.
You don't have to spend 4 hours at the opera house if you don't want. You can literally, it's shorter than a movie.
Wow. Very interesting.
That.
You know, I mean, it's something I haven't explored, you know, but when every time I talk to you, I'm like, yeah, that sounds pretty interesting. You know, maybe I should check it out.
You know, it's interesting because Salome also is almost anti-Semitic.
Really?
The way that Richard Strauss depicts there's four Jews.
Right.
It's actually, I think when you listen to the music, you're like, this actually is not. You can kind of sense that there's of the way that he depicts the Jews as not very flattering.
Really? They depict the Jews with the music?
Yeah, you can definitely hear. I mean, that's what's interesting about opera is that you hear the words, like you know what they're saying on stage, but the music really will tell you really what's going on underneath the surface. And Richard Wagner was known for that. You know, he's a famous anti-Semite.
Right.
So it's interesting because it's multi-layered. And it's with film, I mean, you know how music sets the mood, but in opera it's the same way.
Right.
I want to also know your opinion as a Jew. Because we've had a lot of discussions about Wagner in our household and him being an anti-Semitic composer. Honestly, like I've listened to his music and I think it's fantastic. And I think that no matter what a person does and cancel culture and everything, I think that there's still a magic to people's work that you can't take away. So I'd love to know your take on that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I don't think we can't separate the artist from the work, but I mean, you listen to the great operas of Wagner. They're amazing. I mean, and they're not the language in them, the music is not anti-Semitic.
Mm. I mean, just associated that way because of Hitler.
One opera that kind of has the Die Meister singer that kind of you could almost argue, but it was Hitler's favorite opera. So how do you separate?
Right.
You know,
yeah.
You really can't. But
totally.
I think when you listen to the music, I mean, most of them, yeah, they're Germanic, but they're. They're banned in Israel.
Yeah.
It's one, yeah, I mean, Richard Wagner, Israel Philharmonic will not perform the works.
Oh, really? Because I thought they do listen to it there.
No. I mean, maybe on the radio, but the Israel Philharmonic will not perform Wagner, but it's out of respect of what happened in the Holocaust.
Right. Makes sense, you know.
But in this country, Wagner's performed. There's really no issue with it.
People could care less.
Could care less. And I think if you listen to the music, they're not going to have an issue with it.
Right.
Yeah. I'm sure, like, the. Whatever the music sounds like or says is also associated now in our minds because I'm sure it's been used time after time in films to depict Hitler or as like an undertone in movies where Hitler.
Yeah, well, like the Ride of the Valkyries, I think, has been used over 1,000 times. And so that's Richard Wagner. And look, people listen to it and they just think, oh, it's for the helicopters or the flying horses.
Mm.
And look, I mean, it's really hard to parse. And with history, you kind of look back at who was Wagner, what did he believe, how was it taken by the Nazis and used in ways that Wagner was long dead. I mean, he wrote this music 60 years before any of that happened. And so in Israel, there is a sensitivity out of respect of Holocaust survivors and what happened. But, I mean, ultimately, I think it's great music, and I think it deserves to be performed.
Yeah, and it's not always about... you know, who likes the music. It's about who actually wrote the music.
Right.
So, I mean, Hitler could have liked Taylor Swift, so.
Yeah. But, I mean, we do listen to Michael Jackson. We see Woody Allen movies, and they are all controversial, you know. Of course, nothing is like Hitler, but.
Yeah, of course.
But the thing is that, in some places it doesn't really speak to them, so they listen, you know. But in Israel it makes sense, you know. Yeah. It's and that's the thing now, they're trivializing the Holocaust so much here lately that it's just everybody's calling everybody Hitler and all this shit, and it's like it minimizes the tragedy, you know what I'm saying? I mean, because it's huge. I mean, what they did there is the monstrosity there is there's never been anything equal to that, you know. In human history. So to trivialize that and minimize it, I think is wrong, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
I agree that it's definitely been minimized a lot.
Yeah.
Especially in society today.
Right.
You know?
And, you know, and those people that, you know, have been through it and they're still alive, what do you say to them, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know. So, I mean, it's just like I know because when I grew up, they really teach you about the Holocaust and everything. You realize what happened there, you know, and it's like unbelievable. It really is unbelievable that they created a machine that kills people, you know, to kill people, you know, a systematic way. And the Germans have always been efficient and all that stuff. And they did the same thing here, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And we still go and buy their cars and everything. I drive a fucking Mercedes.
Drinking German beer.
Somebody made me feel guilty about it, though. You know?
Yeah.
I'm not buying German cars, you know? So.
I mean, I'm guilty. I love German boys, so.
But it is different people, you know, it's a different time, it's different people. I mean, Israel has normal relationships with Germany, you know, and so it's not the same people, you know.
And they also like take teaching that very seriously in their schools to young kids. They teach about the Holocaust and things like that.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But yeah, it is different people. I like that perspective.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, we beat this to pulp, pretty much the topic. I want to know. So, what's in store for you? I mean, you also did you say he's a chef? You're a chef too.
Pastry chef, amateur
baker,
and a beekeeper.
Where did you pick that up? Where did you
the baking?
Yeah.
That was pre-pandemic. And look, I baked like manic. And Jen will tell you that I gained all this weight. Not that much weight. But I mean, I was really
I think everyone
sourdoughs, sugars. I mean, it was just insane. Right. And so I've kind of moved on from baking. On rare occasions, I will for a friend or a birthday or something. But like, I've been spending a lot of time in the garden.
Mm-hmm. He's a beekeeper,
and
now
I'm
too.
A beekeeper.
Oh, really?
So I got bees in April, and that's a whole new thing, caring for a whole hive of like probably now like 40,000 to 50,000.
And where is
bees.
It?
It's in my partner's backyard.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that's amazing.
Yeah, and he took the backyard from being just this barely green landscape to now there's like rose bushes and all these different plants, and it's beautiful.
We have over 1,000 plants.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's been, and that's what I've done pretty much through COVID on weekends, is just garden and being outside. And that, by the way, is so not me. I used to be inside, air conditioned. Now I'm like getting dirty in the dirt and. I'm planting flowers and
it's liberating.
It's amazing. Yeah, it's actually changed my life.
We change, yeah. I mean, yeah. We mature, we change, you know, we like different things and stuff, you know. It's interesting you're talking about sugar and everything. My my brother and his wife have been on keto diet. Have you heard of those?
Totally.
So that's like a lot of fats and no sugar and all that stuff.
It's like Atkins, basically.
Right. So they're starting to scare everybody with sugar. Calling it the silent killer.
It is, and, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think in moderation. Look, that's the thing. Like, don't eat sugar constantly all day. The American diet and, like, just the standard diet nowadays is really revolved around processed food and sugar. That doesn't mean you should never eat a pastry again. Like, you need to enjoy the things that you enjoy in your life, you know? But the thing is, we're just eating too much of it and the wrong kinds. Like, I don't want to eat a Snickers. Like, I'd rather have, you know, an exquisite fruit tart and like too much of it, but like you know,
or key lime pie
or a key, yeah, you know, I love a good key lime. He thinks key lime's trash. I love key lime.
Really?
It's a little trash, but it's okay.
Whatever, if it's done right.
When I did it, it was nice.
Yeah,
but
it was lovely. But yeah, like, look, sugar, yeah, just keep it out of your day to day and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know, because someone who's on keto, they're not going to be on keto the rest of their life. They're also packing hardened animal fat into their intestines. That's not good either. Yeah. You don't want to sit there and eat all these animal fats. That's just as bad for you as all the sugars. Mm. So it's good to just eat some animal fat, eat some sugar, eat a lot of vegetables.
Right.
And
they can't eat a lot of vegetables on keto.
I think you can.
No, only like cauliflower and...
That's so lame. That's not sustainable. They're going to go crazy.
Well,
and then
they've been
gonna...
doing it for a year, but... You know,
I know people who have done it longer than that and then went crazy.
Yeah?
Yeah, and then they're going to put on like 40 pounds and then be miserable again. Okay. It's a... Don't... Never diet. Just change your lifestyle.
Right. Yeah.
It's the truth.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I've lost weight every single way that you can possibly imagine.
Yeah.
And the only one that actually works is changing your lifestyle.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. You have to make it sustainable.
That's profound advice.
It's true.
Yeah.
You have to make it sustainable. It's the only way.
Yeah.
You know, like, I went 3 years without sugar. And then you know what I did? I started eating sugar and I like had a full breakdown about it and just was like pounding sugar.
Really?
I was like eating like sour candy just from like the bulk bins at Dylan's candy bar. So good. But I don't really eat that kind of stuff anymore. I just occasionally eat a pastry or some like vegan ice cream or just a little bit.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
I know. I don't, you know, eat too much. I think every day I might have like a little, candy bar or something, you know, like chocolate, piece of chocolate or something. But I don't overdo it. You know what I'm saying? I go to restaurants, I don't really eat dessert, you know. Mm. So I don't need that much sugar, you know. And I think, I mean, they're saying that, I mean, they were saying to me, I didn't really realize this, but the sugar really is the root problem for most people, like health and stuff, you know, when you get diabetes and all that stuff, you know, and then it brings on different disease and all that.
Yeah, because most Americans are casually eating candy and sugar all day.
Right.
And a lot of the stuff, like peanut butter has sugar in it. Peanut butter doesn't need sugar. Like, there's random sugar. There's corn syrup in everything. Like, that's the kind of sugar that we need to stay away from, is all that kind of junk that's hidden and stuff.
Right.
If you, because you said you eat mostly like a pretty Mediterranean diet.
Well, not mostly, really.
Oh, well, you eat like a lot of fish and salad and stuff.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Yeah. If you want to eat a little piece of chocolate once a day, like, go for it.
Yeah.
That's not
going
to give you diabetes.
Yeah. I know. Well, you know, but you said, like, everything's got corn syrup in it and stuff. You know, if I make, like, a salami sandwich or something, you know, it might have it in it, right?
Depends on the bread.
But not the meat.
Hopefully not.
I mean, the meat is filled with a lot of nitrates because salami is a very processed meat.
Okay. What about turkey? Like,
like
a lunch meat type of thing.
It depends what kind you're getting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It depends. Sometimes they like grind it all up and then pack it and then slice it with a bunch of additives in it. And sometimes you get, they have like the actual like turkey that they just go ahead and slice. That's what you
right.
want. You want the actual turkey. You don't want the processed
right.
junk.
Where am I going to find that?
Whole Foods.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. I never go there, but I hear it's pretty
right
cool.
there.
I know, but I don't know why. I tried the other day to another one. I went in the parking lot, an underground parking lot in Tarzana, right?
That one's underground, too.
And I could not find the entrance to the goddamn store.
Story of my life. I literally shriek out in agony at least once a day while like going into parking lots.
Really?
In parking garages. I'm like, where's the entrance?
Yeah, to the store, you know?
Yeah.
I couldn't find it, so I just got pissed. I left.
It's like this way,
this
I mean, way. And
signs,
then you're at the exit.
Something, yeah.
Yeah.
Signs, something, you know? I mean, it wasn't that clear where it is, you know, like the elevators, the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. I mean,
I'm
not
glad
that...
I'm not the only one. I'm like, am I stupid or something?
I know. I know. It's crazy, man. It's
Justin
crazy.
Believes in Amazon Fresh.
Yeah, I that's all I got.
I went a couple times. It's actually pretty cool.
It's amazing.
You know?
That's really how I survived the pandemic.
Well, he's been to the actual store. Justin does the delivery.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, I don't leave the house for groceries anymore.
No.
It's been years since I've stepped foot inside a grocery store.
Well, you went to Whole Foods with me once.
Probably begrudgingly.
Yeah, you did. You were like, well, that wasn't so bad, but I'm not doing it again.
But, you know, I tried to order something the other day. They didn't seem to have everything. For
they
delivery.
They do.
They do?
Pretty much.
Mm. There's no need to leave your house.
Like, I was trying to get certain produce and stuff, and they didn't have it. You know, like lettuce in packages and something, or, you know, or I don't know.
They do the individual heads usually.
Yeah. Mm.
And each, it depends on your location. Some locations have different stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I was trying to get one from Vons, and it says, no, you have to get it from Albertsons, or I guess it's the same company or something. But not every store will do it, the deliveries. But maybe I should start, you know?
Check out Amazon Fresh.
It just takes so long to just go through everything, doesn't it? Like,
no.
To order?
No.
It takes much longer to go to the grocery store.
You think so?
And it'll spare you.
I mean, I'm like 15 minutes at the store and that's it. You know, it's not like
a long
time. Yeah,
that's kind of how it is for me too. But the good thing about ordering off Amazon is you can either do Amazon Fresh or there's an option to get Whole Foods.
Right.
So you have both. I mean, you can't do both at the same time. It would be two separate orders. But.
Right. Hmm. Very interesting. So you don't go to the store to get
No, food. Not anymore.
Yeah.
Those days
I don't
are
blame
over.
You. I'm not crazy about it, you know?
Yeah.
I went last night and stuff. It's always like you go for a couple things, you end up with a whole basket full of stuff, you know, cart full.
And sometimes you forget the one thing you needed.
I know. Oh, well. Wow, it's 10:53 already. I didn't even realize.
Wow,
we're totally out of time. We're over time. And that means we've been having a lot of fun. We didn't even touch on the news where Cuomo, actually Andrew Cuomo from New York, the governor of New York, they did an investigation on him and found that he did indeed acted improperly with several women, you know. So now they're probably going to call him to resign and stuff, you know. Yeah.
Are you surprised?
No.
Me either.
I'm not surprised. Justin, thank you so much. How can people find you, social media or something? Do you want to give it out?
Oh, I mean,
you don't.
No,
have
not
to.
Really. But if you check out American Friends of the Israel Philharmonic Orchestra, AFIPO.org, that's the institution I work for, and we have this great concert. So check it out this weekend, Sunday, August 8th.
What time?
Awesome.
11 a.m. Pacific.
11 a.m. Pacific.
Sounds good. That's this Sunday,
this
right?
This Sunday, yeah.
Okay. Sounds good, everybody. Check it out. Justin, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having
me. You see,
me.
It
Thanks,
wasn't Justin. That terrible, right?
It was so fun.
Great.
Okay, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I'll see you at home.
Bye.
Jen, thank you.
Bye.
Bye, everybody. See you tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, only on LA Talk Radio.